May it please the court. My name is Mary Lynn Benham and I represent the appellants City of Golden and Finance Director Jeff Hansen. With me at council table is Dave Williamson, Golden City Attorney. And I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. And of course, we'll keep track of that. Your Honors, the City of Golden is here today asking you to reverse the District Court's entry of summary judgment in Aramark's favor. And of course, to direct judgment in the City of Golden's favor based on two significant errors that the District Court made. First, the District Court erred in holding that all of Aramark sales on the Mines campus are direct wholesale sales to the School of Mines, when in fact they're retail sales directly by Aramark to the consumers of the food or convenience items involved. And it was error for the District Court to consider the electronic script sales, which is another component of this case. There's meal plan sales and electronic script sales paid for with the student's blaster card, which is a student ID. And it was also error for the court to fail to separately consider the taxability of those script sales under the food services management agreement between the School of Mines and Aramark Educational Services.
Ms. Benham, I'm sorry to interrupt right off the bat here, but both sides have indicated quite differing standards of review. And I'd like, because it seems to me that in this case, the standard of review is going to kind of guide where we go. So what do you think is the standard of review here?
Well, standard of review, since you're reviewing a decision on summary judgment, would be de novo. I think where the parties disagree, and what Your Honor may be pointing out, is
Catholic Health Initiatives and that line of cases, quite frankly.
Right, it would be the de novo review, right, for review on summary judgment. And so what the city's asking you to do is, in terms of the standard review, to presume that all transactions are taxable. So when it comes to local sales tax, presume that taxation is the rule and exemption is the exception.
It's standard of review in an exemption case is really where I'm going. I think that's what Catholic Health Initiatives articulated. I think Noble is another case that articulated that.
That the standard of review.
Yeah, on the exemptions.
Is that exemption is, the exemptions are to be construed narrowly?
Burden of proof. Who's the burden of proof counsel?
I'm sorry, I misunderstood, Your Honor. So, yes, the burden of proof is on the taxpayer to prove that the exemption exists and that the presumption is that everything is taxable unless the exemption exists. So,
I'd like to hear from Aramark on that.
So,
thanks.
So, in this case, setting off of that, Your Honor, Aramark is in the position as a retailer in Golden's view on the School of Mines campus, and as the retailer, they do have the burden of proving that the activities on the campus are exempt. Now, to set the stage, Golden taxes all sales of food in the city. It is an essential part of its tax revenue. Over 70% of the city's general revenue comes from sales tax. So this is part of its tax scheme. It differs from the state in that Golden taxes all sales of food, whether it's from a grocery store, a cafe, a cafeteria, a restaurant. Those transactions are all taxable. It doesn't matter where they're purchased in Golden. There's no exemption for sales made on a university campus or a college campus. There's no exemption based on how the food is paid for, as Omar contends here. Those exemptions simply don't exist. If it is a retail sale, that is a taxable transaction under Golden's municipal code. So in this case, there's two primary transactions in issue. We've got the meal plan meals that Aramark contends are being sold directly to the School of Mines for resale to students. What we've asked you to do is look at the meal plan meals and look at the actual substance and realities of the transaction that is taking place there. In all respects, Aramark is on campus through an agreement with the School of Mines to provide food service. And part of that food service, or all of that food service, is to purchase, prepare, and then serve meal plan meals to students who are participating in the meal plans. And while students pay the university up front to participate in that meal plan, the school holds those funds in a fiduciary capacity, and then when Aramark bills for those meals, the school will then pay the money that the students have given to the school to Aramark to compensate it for preparing those meals. The sale is really taking place between Aramark and the consumers, whether it's a student, faculty, or staff that's participating in the meal plan. And the district court got it wrong in finding that there was some kind of wholesale transaction to School of Mines that the Mines would then resell to students. I think we can all agree that the School of Mines is not in the business of selling food. It's not in the business of preparing the food, and it's not in the business of directly handing it to the students.
Is that part of its educational service, I suppose?
I think before maybe modern times, it could be seen as part of the educational process where a campus might have been isolated. There weren't facilities for students to go get food nearby. But in today's day and times, you can get an education online. Certainly nobody needs to provide you a meal plan to get food while you're trying to obtain a college degree. Here in Colorado, most of our universities, if not all, are in a metropolitan area that have convenient access to grocery stores and to restaurants and to other venues to get food, especially the Colorado School of Mines, which is just a block outside of Golden's Old Town District, where there's a plethora of restaurants and other venues to get food, grocery stores, things of that kind. So while Aramark has certainly argued extensively that this is part of the educational process, we would ask you to reject the trial court's holding that that provision of food is essential to education, and that if you were to uphold that ruling, you would essentially be sanctioning food service as something that needed to be provided to every student. And we're asking you to find that it's not essential to education, it's essential to life. Everybody needs food, it doesn't matter whether you're a student or not.
So even though it may not be essential to education, did not Dr. Fox or Mr. Fox testify in his deposition that he thought that having the dining facilities and the food available fostered the educational process for the students at the School of Mines?
There's nothing to say that that same educational process couldn't be fostered at a local tavern or a local restaurant or in students' homes. That, while certainly it is convenient and it's an amenity that the School of Mines provides to have food service on campus, and that might foster those discussions that Dr. Fox referred to in his deposition, there's nothing to say that those same activities can't take place off campus at other venues or even outside of a classroom. It doesn't need to be in a dining hall. It could be anywhere that a student brings a brown bag lunch or goes out with his classmates for a meal.
Well, that's true. It could happen elsewhere, but if it does happen in the dining facility on the campus, then doesn't that go toward the argument made by Aramark that the food is being provided for the college's governmental purposes or in its governmental capacity because it's performing that service and giving the students a chance to get together and discuss educational matters?
Well, that would be akin to the City of Aurora in the Department of Revenue versus Aurora case saying that golf courses and golf carts are necessary for city functions. And in that case, the Supreme Court held that the provision of golf courts and the availability of golf courts to the public was not an essential government function for the City of Aurora. Instead, it was a proprietary business decision that the city made to provide an amenity. So, no, I would not say it's necessary. While it might foster those discussions, again, for this court to hold that the provision of food is necessary for the educational process would be too broad and too sweeping. We have a decision where football is not necessary and activities and events made available to the public are not necessary to the educational process in the CU Regents case. But otherwise, it's not necessarily the educational process, even if it might foster those discussions, just as golf carts are not necessarily to the city of Aurora's municipal functions here in Colorado. So now I would like to move on briefly towards a distinction that the district court failed to make and that we would also like you to correct. The district court wholly sidestepped the issue, which is clear in the food services agreement, of distinguishing between the meal plan meals and the non-meal plan sales. In the food services agreement, there it's in paragraph 12, in that agreement, we pointed it out in our briefs that those provisions allow Aramark to make direct sales of casual meals and convenience items and a la carte items to anybody who wishes to come in and purchase those products, and that it gets to keep the receipts. I believe the agreement says Aramark keeps the net receipts from those and then pays a commission to, I'm sorry, keeps the gross receipts and pays a commission to the School of Mines. That commission is in essence compensation to the School of Mines for allowing it to use its space so that Aramark can sell these items to the public. It's the same thing that's happening with the meal plans. Whether you're using electronic script, your student ID card, be more clear way of saying it, or your meal plan card to pay for a meal, those transactions should be taxable in the same way that Aramark admits it collects tax if you pay for cash, pay for a meal or an a la carte item with cash or credit. Essentially, what's happened here, Aramark and School of Mines have attempted to make an exemption that does not exist in the Golden Code. All sales of food are taxable, and how you pay for that meal should not be the determining factor of whether it's taxable or not. Again, Aramark admitted, their own food services management operator, Chuck Thienpon, admitted that these are retail locations and that if a student walks in and pays for a meal with their Blaster card, no tax will be charged. But if the very next student in line orders the exact same meal or the exact same item and swipes their credit card or pays with cash, that's suddenly and miraculously taxable and that they're collecting a tax. And the city is saying that no such exemption exists and should not be sanctioned by this court.
Madam, I will remind you, you're less than 3 minutes.
I think at that, I will leave that and save the rest of time for my rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Raj Chauhan, bar number 42845. I represent the appellee, Aramark Educational Services, in the matter before you. Your Honors, we ask that you affirm the district court's ruling that Aramark sales of meals and other items to the Colorado School of Mines was a non-taxable transaction under Golden's municipal code for a couple of reasons. One, because it's a direct sale to a state government institution acting in its official government capacity. And secondly, because it's a wholesale transaction, which is exempt from local sales tax under Golden's municipal code.
And pronounce your name again for me.
Chauhan.
Chauhan. Mr. Chauhan, let me interrupt you a minute because I want to follow up on Judge Furman's question about our standard of review here. You cite in your brief waste management as the standard of review for the proposition that all doubts have to be resolved in favor of the taxpayer on this issue. Is that right?
That's right, Your Honor. And we went on to say in our standard of review discussion that we don't agree that the burden of proof is on Aramark here to prove that it qualifies for the exemption. What we disagree with the City of Golden on is the deference given to its administrative rulings in the City Finance Department.
You don't agree that the burden of proof is on Aramark? Let me back up a minute here. You cite waste management right after you cite Noble. You cite Noble for the proposition that our review is de novo. And then you cite waste management for the proposition that all doubts have to be resolved in favor of the taxpayer. However, in Noble, there are statements following that particular standard of review which indicate that we must presume that taxation is the rule and that exemptions are the rare exception. And there are statements that we have to construe narrowly and in favor of the taxing authority. And there are statements that we have to resolve any reasonable doubts against the tax exemption. And there are statements that the burden is on the one claiming the exemption to clearly establish the right to such relief. And that's followed up, and not followed up, it was preceded by the Catholic Health Services case, which also announced those standards of review and clearly pointed out that there was a distinction between an exemption being claimed and an argument about tax in general. Why didn't you provide that litany of factors to us in your brief when you cited Noble?
Well, Your Honor, I think we said that we said in our brief that in the waste management case in particular, the city finance director in that case attempted to interpret the city's municipal sales tax in a way that seemed to be self-serving on the part of the city, attempting to apply its use tax to a waste hauling business for their dumpster roll.
That was looking at whether the service was taxable. That's quite different than the exemptions that you started your argument by saying. Isn't that the wholesale question and an exemption?
The wholesale and the direct sale to a state government.
Those are both exemptions. I think that's quite different than the waste management case. This is an exemption case.
Right. And Your Honors, we arguing from analogy from the waste management case, the City of Commerce City argued that the decisions of its finance director should receive deference. And what we're saying is, Your Honor, that like that case, in a situation where the city interprets its own tax code in such a way that it essentially wipes out a swath of what the exemption stands for, then that decision doesn't deserve deference and this court isn't bound by it. In the Commerce City case, there was an exemption, I believe, Your Honor.
In waste management,
there was, but I think the focus of the opinion was on whether or not the roll-offs, if I recall, were taxable. It was not an exemption case. Noble was an exemption case that you cite right above that. You don't address Catholic Health Initiatives, which I think came out in 2009.
Well, Your Honor, we believe again that we have satisfied the burden of proof that is upon Golden, that we believe the record has satisfied that, and we believe we've satisfied that at the summary judgment level.
Burden of proof is on Golden?
No, the burden of proof is on Aramark to show that it qualifies for the exemption, and we believe we have satisfied that burden.
So you agree that that's the proper standard then? Because that's where Golden started out with their standard of review. That's why I started out with that general question.
We do agree, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Your Honor, this case really begins and ends with Golden Municipal Code Section 3.0304A7, which exempts from local taxation all direct sales to the state of Colorado, its departments or institutions, while acting in their official government capacity when billed to and paid for by the governmental entity. Your Honor, that's exactly the kind of transaction that happened here, and I'll walk through each of the factors. First, undoubtedly, CSM is a state institution. It's codified in Colorado revised statutes and in our state constitution at Article 7, Section 5. Second, Aramark sales to CSM are undoubtedly direct sales pursuant to the Food Services Management Agreement. That's the operative contract between Aramark and the Colorado School of Mines. In that contract, which the Department of Revenue found to be a classic requirements contract, CSM agreed to purchase all the meals that it would require in order to resell to its students at a negotiated price over a fixed period of time with volume discounts.
Let me interrupt you there.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we have a lot of questions about this. Why? What does it matter if the contract between Aramark and the School of Mines is a requirements contract? Isn't it possible for a purchaser in a requirements contract to also be the end consumer?
That could be the case, Your Honor. Requirements contact your contracts commonly exist in wholesale transactions. They're a standard feature of commerce in the world that we live in. And so I thought it was important to mention that a wholesale requirements contract was at least the basis under which the Department of Revenue found that transaction to be a wholesale transaction, even though I'm in the context right now of making the direct sales to a state institution argument.
So in that regard, I assume you're relying partially on section 23-41-104 as cited in your brief to support your argument that the sales were made to School of Mines in their governmental capacity. And in the brief, you quote, you cite that particular statute as quote, Colorado School of Mines has the explicit authority to rent, lease, maintain, and operate dining facilities on the college grounds. Where in the statute does it say that?
I don't have the statute in front of me, Your Honor.
I do.
It's the statute.
I do have the statute in front of me. And it says that the Board of Trustees, it doesn't say anything about the Colorado School of Mines. It talks about the Board of Trustees having the power to lease portions of the college grounds to private persons and corporations and to provide for the construction of research and development facilities, health and recreation facilities. And it goes on to say, and to rent, lease, maintain, operate, and purchase such buildings and facilities. It is nowhere close to the quote that you indicated in your brief from that statute.
Your Honor, we believe implicit in that paragraph is actual authority to maintain and operating dining facilities.
But my point is, sir, that you quoted that statute in your brief, and you didn't say it was implicit in the statute that the college can do this or that it has explicit authority to operate dining facilities on the college grounds. I'm interested in why you had such a misquote of the statute itself in your brief.
Well, Your Honor, that may have been a mistake on my part. I apologize to the court if that's the case. If I may continue, Your Honor, this Colorado School of Mines also acts in its government capacity when it provides educational services to students. The Colorado School of Mines, Your Honor, as you noted, believes that incoming freshmen who come to this campus, 85% of the residential halls are filled by freshman students, most of whom are leaving home for the first time. The Colorado School of Mines believes that extending maximum levels of support in an educationally challenging environment is paramount to helping these college students succeed, particularly in that first year. And as Dr. Daniel P. Fox has testified through the depositions and as we briefed, the Colorado School of Mines views the dining halls as an extension of the classroom. Academic discussions that start in the classroom spill over into the dining halls. Faculty and staff are encouraged to share meals with students, and visiting scholars who come to the school are also encouraged to share meals with the students. The students work out their problems in class. They may engage in highly intellectual academic discussions. And the School of Mines knows through research that a student is much more likely to thrive and succeed in this environment if it has these support systems around it. In addition, Your Honor, we did quote some old case law from the 19th century talking about this long tradition of extending the educational mission of the institution to the dining hall facilities. Those issues were covered in cases dealing with Yale University and Harvard College from the late 19th century. They were property tax cases, but so the underlying analysis engaged in by the Supreme Court of Massachusetts and what was the predecessor to the Supreme Court of Connecticut essentially concluded that dining hall facilities are part of that educational mission and therefore were not taxable under a local and state taxing scheme.
What significance, if any, should be paid to the language in the Golden Municipal Code that says the direct sales, in order to be exempt, the sales would have to be direct to a government agency in its government capacities only. What significance does the word only have, if any?
Well, a component of the transaction that occurs in governmental capacity, Your Honors, would be what is covered by the exemption, and anything falling outside of that would not be. For instance, if we talk about the script transactions, the script transactions were a component of the meal plan program, stored electronic points that students could use in conjunction with their meal plans to buy toothpaste, shaving cream, and other items they might need on campus without having to venture off. However, in the same convenience store location, somebody off the street who is not a student of the university could come in and buy a candy bar. And in that situation, the tax was collected and it was remitted by Aramark. And so I would suggest to the court that the exemption applies to the meal plan portion of the program, not to outside sales. And of course, when a student's family would come on campus and take a meal in the dining hall, and those meals would be paid for in cash or credit card, sales tax would be collected and remitted.
Well, I'm asking about the distinction between a governmental entity's governmental capacities and its proprietary capacities. Is there such a distinction, and is it important with regard to the language of the Golden Municipal Code when it says governmental capacities only?
Your Honor, I think if we're talking about the City of Aurora golf course case, one could draw that distinction. The golf course seems to be farther set apart from the mission of the city. Here, the dining services are integrally related to what's going on at the academic institutions. It's a direct support system. I don't think anybody argued that there's an absolute necessity that you have to have dining facilities, but this is the reason that the Colorado School of Mines engaged in its dining facility operation, to support the students, to extend the education. And I might point out that sure, you can get an online degree someplace, or you could go to a part-time junior college in northern Oklahoma. But this is the Colorado School of Mines is an intense academic environment. It is a residential campus. It is meant to be as such. And part of the, you know, getting that education for the vast majority of students who go there is to be part of that residential program and engage in the academic community in every way. The dining services is an extension of that academic community. And Your Honors, I'd simply like to, you know, address the wholesale versus retail argument of the Hodgson versus Profit case very briefly. In Hodgson versus Profit, this was a case that was narrowly construed to interpret federal labor law. It did make the wholesale versus retail distinction, but it seems that the I see my time is running out, Your Honor. In closing, I would just say that there are two exemptions that apply in this case, the direct sale to a state government and the wholesale exemption under Golden's Municipal Code. We ask that you affirm the lower court's ruling.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Benham, you have about 2.5 minutes left for rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor. So, Your Honor, jumping in on the direct sales issue, first of all, there is no direct sale to the School of Mines in this case. The reality of what's going on here is Aramark is in all respects providing food directly and convenience items directly to the consumers. There's no involvement by Mines other than providing space to Aramark through the Food Services Management Agreement.
Aren't the sales made directly to Colorado School of Mines? And in fact, Colorado School of Mines charges more for the meals than they pay for them to Aramark, right?
Well, and Your Honor, let's talk about the Hodgson versus Profit case briefly. The threshold question in that case was the food service provider acting as a retailer or not? And the question for you here today is or is not Aramark acting as a retailer? And therefore, are their sales subject to sales tax as retail sales? So in the Hodgson case, while that was a federal labor law case, the same threshold, the court in that case had to reach the same threshold question. Was this provider acting as a retailer on campus? Were there wholesale sales between the food service provider and the school. And in that case, the 10th Circuit was very clear after looking at a number of facts that are practically identical to the arrangement we have here, that that provider was acting as a retailer in every respect, and that the school was acting as a collection agent, which is what you were getting at, I believe, with your question, that there is a markup on the price of meals when the students pay for them through the school.
And there were some differences in Hodgson, a primary difference being that the food service provider actually advertised its services to other folks than the students and outside the campus. Is that right?
And to the extent they did, it was a minor part of what they did. Even in Hodgson, the food service provider admitted that was a small part of their sales. And here, Aramark will tell you the same, that they're not actively marketing to the public, but they do make sales to the public and to guests. In summary, Your Honor, we're asking you to reach that same threshold question, to decide the same threshold issue. Is Aramark acting as a retailer here? Should they be exempt under the City of Golden's Municipal Code that does not exempt any sales for sales of food in the City of Golden? They're all taxable, and we're asking you to uphold that regardless of where those sales take place or how they are paid for. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. And we thank both counsel for your arguments today. This matter will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course. As I